Crisis Radio. This is now our second hour of the program today, and we always want to keep up with the struggle to enforce the U.S. Constitution against the caprice and the outrageous evasions of the current tenant of the White House. So for that, we have to go to the alpha birther, that is to say, the founder of these cases, the one who opened it up, and he did in August of 2008, Phil Berg of Philadelphia. Welcome, Phil.
My pleasure. How are you, sir?
Good. Now, last week you were telling us about a possible court date, but then something happened basically just after the program ended. So why don't you bring us up to date on that?
Yeah, unfortunately, the hearing, which is scheduled for October 26, 2009, in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, has been there's not going to be a hearing. We got an order from the court that they're going to take the case in on and decide the case on the briefs, not on with no oral argument. This is not unique. It's done in many cases, but we were hopeful that this case, because of the national significance of it, would have oral argument. And we don't know why. You can't ask the court why, but they decide they're going to decide the case on the briefs. Now, it could be just because, they've, before they come to a hearing, they've reviewed the matter and they could think that they don't need any further oral argument or any questions. It also could be because the Third Circuit attorneys and staff have followed some of the other cases around the country and some of the shenanigans going on recently with this Orley Tate and don't want any shenanigans in the court. Now, and I say that because it's really time for Orley Tate to stop being involved in these cases. As far as I'm concerned, he's a disgrace. And if that's a reason our case is not being heard, I can only hope that the court has, on our case, reviewed it and they're going to decide in our favor based on our brief. I don't know. I don't know when the decision will come out. I had another case months ago with the Third Circuit, and the day that it was supposed to be submitted for oral argument, I got a notice a few weeks before that there would be no oral argument, and the day that it was supposed to be submitted is the day they issued an opinion. So that could be in the works already. And the reason I mention this Orley Tate is because I mentioned her before. I don't like mentioning other counsel, but I really think she's in there for ulterior motives. She was fined. The judge Land in Georgia gave a rule to show cause against her and why he should not fine her under Rule 11, sanctions $10,000. On the last day that her response was due, she filed a motion for a continuance, but she also filed a motion for the judge to recuse himself, and she went into all kinds of details, accusations against this judge. Well, the judge just came out the other day and denied her motion for an extension, denied his recusal, and assessed her a fine of $20,000, at which point on the same day she went on different radio shows and mentioned that she's not going to pay that fine. She has a total disrespect for our court system, and I really think she's there for ulterior motives. She hasn't succeeded in one thing she's done, except to aggravate everybody. And for new people coming aboard, that's not the way to go. So I'm asking people to follow us, ObamaCrimes.com, OBAMACRIMES.COM, ObamaCrimes.com. We have the most up-to-date information. We're going to be posting the thing shortly that the case was submitted, is being submitted, and there'll be no oral argument because I've gotten calls from people around the country. One woman told me she was going to drive in 5.5 hours from Ohio. She wanted the exact address and everything. And if people are planning to come in for next week, don't come. There will be no hearing. And just let's pray that the court has going to decide our way. Now, again, we have an uphill battle because the courts at this point, have taken positions adverse to us. And we're just hoping that everything goes our way. You got to hold 1 second.
We understand. Very busy. Certainly, the activity of Orley Tate, who is apparently incompetent as a lawyer and also, of course, a reactionary in terms of politics. And I think that's the selling point for her, for a lot of circles, is that Phil Berg is essentially a Democratic Party leader from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, whereas Orley Tate is a raving reactionary. So they can claim that the right, extreme right winger has somehow created this issue, whereas they didn't. And Orley Tate has really done more to sabotage it than to bring it forward.
Right. She was just on, Joy Behar has a new TV show at night on, I think it's on CNN. CNN or Fox.
Yes.
And she was on the other night and, she made a fool of herself again. She keeps talking about this January hearing date. Well, the judge hasn't, he said that's when the hearing would be, but he still has before him a motion to dismiss. And I'm talking about Judge Carter in the California case. And she keeps showing documents and she comes out with a ridiculous statement. And I must disagree 100%. She says to be, natural born, and she read something from the 1700s or someplace, I don't know, that both parents must be, U.S. citizens. Well, that's nonsense. That's not the law.
Right.
And when she says stupid things like that, it just discourages people around this country. And it's time really she, goes back to practicing dentist, or I believe the Judge Land in Georgia submitted for disciplinary action in California. She really should be disbarred for some of the stuff she's doing. And I don't like to give her any attention, but our case is significant. We've got to just hope the Third Circuit grants us what we want, which is called standing. And standing is something that we should have. We should be able to challenge the Constitution. But we have to wait and see on that. We still have our other two cases pending, one the interpleader action and one on the False Claims Act case. And we're going to pursue these legally through the system, and if they're turned down in the circuit courts, we're going to appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court with valid cases, not some nonsense that other people are putting forth. And that's what we need people focused. And also, it's real important that the public gets behind us, and that's why Orly Tate hurts us when she does nonsense like that, because we need the public behind us to move forward here to demand the truth. I mean, now, I'm sure you've heard about Fox News, has been coming out with a lot of, the White House is attacking Fox News, and Fox News is coming back and raising questions about all the people that are on, Bush's staff or, cabinet or surroundings. And, some of these people really have questionable backgrounds. So the latest one, I think, is Anita Dunn, Mal is her, favorite person. This is ridiculous what's going on here, and that's why I'm going to be writing to Fox and say, you know, they're wanting you to wake up and discuss the point I've raised, which is legit. If you're concerned with all the people around him, then why don't you realize that what he did is he's a phony. He's a fraud. He's not even a natural-born citizen. Raise that issue. What are you afraid to raise that issue for if you're raising these about these other people? If he has other advisors, these advisors around him who think more of outside of this country, why would it not be correct that he would have been a total fraudulent, total hoax, like I've been alleging for the past year and a half.
Quite right. Phil, let me add another dimension to this. Maybe you can give us an opinion. Here in the Washington Post this morning, we have two writers, Ronald D. Rotunda and J. Peter Pham, who point out that accepting the Nobel Prize is unconstitutional. It's a blatant violation of Article 1, Section 9, which says no person holding any office of profit or trust under the United States shall, without the consent of Congress, accept any present emolument, office, title of any kind whatsoever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Now, the Nobel is $1 million plus. Even if you give it to charity, Obama would get a $500,000 tax write-off. He'd get a deduction. And so he's accepting a valuable present from a foreign state because this is the government of Norway. This is part of the government, the parliament of Norway. So isn't this another dimension where Obama is trampling on the Constitution and completely disregarding the document we've got to live by?
It sounds very, very plausible, and nothing would surprise me with Obama.
I'll send you a reference. Thank you very much, Phil. We'll see you next week.
ObamaCrimes.com. Thank you.
Absolutely. And give a contribution. We'll be back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley in Washington. Let's just contemplate for a second this very interesting op-ed in the Washington Post today, October 16th, 2009. Ronald D. Rotunda and J. Peter Pham, P-H-A-M, one a law professor, another a think tanker, and whoever they are, the arguments are convincing. An unconstitutional Nobel. We have to remember, Article 1, Section 9, that's the so-called emolument clause. No person, it's actually title of nobility clause, I think is a better, you're not allowed to accept titles of nobility or similar titles from foreign governments if you want to work for the U.S. government. No person holding any office of profit or trust under the United States shall, without the consent of Congress, accept any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Now, I had written an essay about this in 1995. You may find this on the internet. U.S. Constitution bars Colin Powell from the presidency. Because Colin Powell, Sir Colin, had accepted a knighthood from the British government, and he preened himself on the fact that the Queen of Colonialism had given him this title. We've got Sir George Bush the Elder, Sir Henry Kissinger, Sir Brent Scowcroft, Sir Norman Schwarzkopf for the general of the First Gulf War. We've got a couple of others, Sir, all these sirs, right? But Colin Powell made the mistake of thinking about going back into politics, elected politics, after he had gotten this this knighthood. And, of course, he then became Secretary of State. And by that time, there was nothing more to do. But this is now another constitutional issue, which I think the friends of the Constitution are undoubtedly going to be very interested in this fact. Now, again, the idea is that the Nobel Prize is a commission, in this case the Peace Prize, five members of the Nobel, the Norwegian Nobel Committee, elected by the Storting, that is the Great Assembly, the Parliament of Norway, and this is then distilled into a body representing the legislature of a sovereign foreign state. And the emolument is 1.4 million. Now, Obama says he'll give it to charity. Yeah, wait a minute. If you give $1.4 million to charity, you then get an income tax deduction. You pay less taxes to the tune of $50,000 is subtracted from your taxable income. So that is a piece of change. It is a tangible or intangible present. And the law says if the president accepts a tangible or intangible present for more than a minimum value from any foreign government, the gift shall become the property of the United States. So Obama's not just violating the Constitution by accepting the Nobel Prize. He's violating a statute law that money is not his. He can't give it to charity. That goes to the U.S. Treasury to reduce the deficit. And now we see that Obama is a serial offender. June 3rd, 2009, when Obama was in the Middle East for his demagogic speech in Cairo, trying to dupe the Islamic world into becoming his tool against Russia and China. This was the trip where Obama bowed to the king of Saudi Arabia. He received the color of King Abdul Aziz Order of Merit, that is to say a collar probably made of gold or silver with all kinds of gems, diamonds, rubies, God knows what. This is the highest decoration in the repertoire of Saudi Arabia. He received it from King Abdullah. That was when he was kowtowing and scraping and bowing like a toady for the King of Saudi Arabia. Bush the Elder had been awarded this same order in January of the previous year. So this is a chivalric order. This is another violation of the Constitution. So time to get busy. Start with this very interesting article, An Unconstitutional Nobel by Ronald D. Rotunda and J. Peter Pham, PHAM, Washington Post. 16th of October. Now, in the time we have left, let's go back to economics. We want to mention, first of all, the question of the social safety net under heavy attack. Washington Post, a couple of days ago, points out many defined pension funds. Now, this is not a 401k or an IRA where you're on your own and all the risk shifts to you. This is theoretically where you have got the right in a contract to get a defined benefit pension with a cost of living escalator. And, of course, the problem is that the pension funds, under the hypnotic spell of the Wall Street jackals, put all the money into derivatives. So this is where we have state pension funds like Maryland and other places have lost between 20% and 30% of their funds. So lots and lots of people still have defined pension funds. These were the lucky ones, right? These were the traditional pensions, not the ones that you have to manage and where you're supposedly exposed to the ups and downs of the market. But this is where you were supposed to be guaranteed. Obviously, you're not going to be guaranteed, because the only contracts that matter in this society are the ones for hedge fund managers who've got to get their bonuses from Bank of America and AIG, not working people. Forget them. So we got a two-class system here. We've got an elite and a mass, and if you're in the elite, you get hope of justice, or more than justice, but the average person, you can forget it. So the defined benefit pensions are in trouble. Now, Social Security. We're told that there has been no inflation over the past 12 months. Actually, the Department of Labor Consumer Price Index, with their obsolete and absurd market basket, claims that there's a 1.3% deflation. Well, this is baloney. This is bunk. There is no deflation. This was always hokum. The appearance of it is given by the fact that the oil bubble collapsed from 150 down to 30 last year, but it's now crept up again, and we're up to 77 per barrel this morning. But the Social Security Administration says there will be no cost of living increase for seniors under Social Security. Now, there are a lot of things wrong with this. The Consumer Price Index was doctored and basically destroyed in its value by Michael Boskin, under the first Bush administration. This is now in the early 90s. Boskin said, oh, the CPI overestimates the real inflation. We want to tone it down. We don't want to pay so much. So essentially, the thing was doctored and fixed. The inflation is there, and it comes in the form of insurance of all kinds, medical care of all kinds, education of all kinds, and other things that are not reflected in the market basket. Back in a minute.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
World Crisis Radio. So in this world economic depression caused by deregulation, privatization, and the genocidal litany of the Austrian school and the Chicago boys, we've got the defined benefit pensions having taken a hit of 20% to 30%. And now the Social Security Administration says there should be no cost of living increase for 2009 to 10, because there has been no inflation. And this is simply a big lie, because the market basket that this is based on is completely obsolete and does not reflect insurance, be it liability, medical or other kinds, education expenses, and other things that have been going up. So now we have Obama. Obama realizes that he has thoroughly antagonized senior citizens. Medicare recipients have somehow figured out that he wants to loot $500 billion out of Medicare, destroying the effectiveness of this landmark, very successful Great Society program, going back to LBJ in 1965. Obama comes on the scene once again as the destroyer of the social and economic gains of the American people that have been won through decades and decades of struggle. So Obama says, throw them a sop of $250 each. That would come to $12 to $13 billion. The Washington Post, of course, scandalized. The Washington Post, the house organ of the Federal Reserve System, that's what they are. Washington Post says, horrors, horrors, that's too much. There are apparently even Republican plans to increase the benefits by a percentage. Now, you can see what the Republicans are aiming at. If you increase it by a percentage, you're helping the more affluent recipients of Social Security. In other words, the higher your benefit, the more money you'll get. The lump sum approach, equal for everybody, is a good approach, but the $250 is inadequate. Because remember, 401ks have been destroyed, IRAs destroyed, defined benefit plans are in big trouble. Social Security is all that's left. It's got to be increased by large lump sum amounts, equal for everybody, so that the Social Security pension becomes a living pension and not simply a way to vegetate into poverty. There's also the question, where should this money come from? Congressman Boehner of the Republicans says it should be paid out of unspent TARP funds. But wait a minute, there's a Social Security trust fund there, Congressman Boehner, and you know that quite well. So it should come out of the money that has already been accumulated and which exists there in the form of U.S. government securities. Another one is unemployment insurance. Unemployment insurance needs to be extended. We've got 10 million unemployed. The number of people who have now exhausted their benefits is numbered in the millions. They are essentially destitute. We've got to extend the unemployment benefits. Who comes on the scene now? The reactionary Republican, Senator Coburn, a dyed-in-the-wool free marketeer, a servant of Wall Street, whatever cultural populist cloak he uses out there in Oklahoma. He says, no, I'm going to stop the unemployment insurance extensions from going through because I want that to be paid also out of the unused portions of the bailout. Wait a minute again, Senator Coburn. Employers and employees pay into a fund which is set up under the Social Security Act of 1935, which is there for unemployment insurance. So as long as that money is not used up, it can be spent. So what are you doing there, Coburn? This is an obvious, it's a transparent attempt to sabotage any attempt to shore up the crumbling social safety net. So this is the situation. Cap and trade. We've got new ammunition against the cap and trade monstrosity being proposed by Obama. I guess the most important ammunition is that it's very cold. Here we are in Washington, D.C. in mid-October, and the temperature is just above 40 degrees in the daytime. We've got freezes in the western suburbs of Washington, D.C. in the middle of October. We had snow in Denver last week, and now this week we've got snow in north central Pennsylvania, snow going into New York State. We've got snow in Connecticut, into Massachusetts, and I believe even Rhode Island. Temperatures in the 30s in New York City. What global warming? Where is global warming? It's a fraud. Call a halt on this stuff already. We had early snow in Iceland. In Iceland, it came down on the 30th of September in the hills above Reykjavik. And we've got reports from Vienna, Austria, early snow there, too. What is this lunatic demagogy of global warming? Stop it already. Of course, we've got ads here in Washington, D.C. Shell Oil, a branch of Royal Dutch Shell, of that nefarious Anglo-Dutch combine that we have learned to look to for threats. Shell Oil loves cap and trade. They want more and more cap and trade. The Congressional Budget Office in the person of Elmendorf, the resident bean counter, has conceded that the cap and trade bill will cut the growth of U.S. domestic product. Now, that's obviously a wildly understated estimate of the true cost and the true damage by this, but the Congress apparently lives by the CBO, so there it is. It's going to undermine the growth of GDP. Waxman-Markey is the name of this bill. It's got to be stopped. We have to say no. We're also told that other private studies say 2 million people will lose their jobs thanks to Waxman-Markey, and I'm sure that's an understatement. Remember, green jobs, the more green jobs you have, the poorer you get. Green jobs are anti-economical. They require subsidies. If green jobs were economical, then go out and create them. But no, they've got to turn as rent seekers to government to get subsidies for the green jobs. And remember, if you impose that cap and trade, the export price of U.S. grain, corn, rice, and related products will double at the minimum. That's even before Goldman Sachs comes in with a speculative bubble in carbon offsets. That will mean that of the billion people who are on the verge of starvation in Africa, South Asia, and poorer parts of Latin America, hundreds of millions will die. Hundreds of millions will die for a theory about the weather. Is that leftism? That's an oligarchical, aristocratic, elitist theory of leftism that says we're concerned about the planet, and hundreds of millions of impoverished masses can very well go and die. Now, let's shift gears. We want to look at the one other interesting point. China has already defaulted on derivatives. Remember, we had this interesting report some weeks ago that China was considering defaulting on certain derivatives. These are Chinese state-owned companies. They have apparently now gone ahead and said some of these derivatives are just too much and we will not pay them. So there's a concrete step away from the world dominion of derivatives, which is obviously the goal of the International Monetary Fund under Dominique Strauss-Kahn, who says that in the scale of human values, derivatives come first, and human life is an also-ran or does not even appear. Let's change gears now to Afghanistan. This is the great travail of the Obama regime is now Afghanistan. And we have to get back to the question of the death panel. There is a death panel. There's a death panel in the White House on Afghanistan that has now had 5 out of its 6 planned meetings, and we're still waiting for the death count, the body count that's going to come out of it. We'll be back in a minute.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Radio, the death panel meeting in the White House. Now, they've had 5 sessions, and they're scheduled to have a 6th. Who's on the death panel for Afghanistan? Chaired, of course, by Obama. We've got Biden, the vice president, and his national security advisor, Tony Blinken. Tony Blinken from the law firm of Winken, Blinken, and Nod, it's reported. Tony Blinken represents Biden. Biden is in favor of predator murders out of the sky, but no troop escalation. We've got Defense Secretary Robert Gates, the Brzezinski man. We've got White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs, Foreign Policy Aide Douglas Lute, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs Admiral Mike Mullen, Deputy National Security Advisor Dennis McDonough, another in the same class, Mark Lippert, another Thomas E. Donlan, all Deputy National Security Advisors, White House Counterterror Advisor John O. Brennan from the CIA, UN Ambassador Susan Rice, the warmonger, National Intelligence Director, or Czar, Dennis Blair, Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, White House Chief of Staff, Rombozo Emanuel, National Security Advisor, James L. Jones, Leon Panetta from the CIA, Special Czar for Afghanistan, Pakistan, Holbrooke, Central Command, David Petraeus. So they're deciding, and we're now about 76 days into this process. All of the defects of imperialism on display here. In particular, if you want to be a fascist, you got to make decisions relatively fast. Decisionism is one word that was applied to Mussolini. I guess we don't have that in the current version. Obama has indeed, of course, in the background, even while they're talking, sent 13,000 more in. Obama's attempts to get troops from the Europeans have basically been a failure. He's gotten at most 4,000 troops. This was the charm offensive, the Messiah, the anointed one, went to Europe, 4,000. Now, one of these, though, is Gordon Brown. Gordon Brown, in a pompous strutting speech in the House of Commons, has offered 500, hold on to your hats, 500 more British, presumably these Gherkin mercenaries that they have from somewhere in Asia. If, Gordon Brown says, if other NATO countries go along, we'll send these 500. That brings the British up to 9,500. You can see what they're doing. Gordon Brown is trying to get the U.S. committed to a debacle and quagmire in Afghanistan. It reminds me of Robert Granger Kerr Thompson, the advisor to President Diem and indeed then to Johnson in the Vietnam War, who wanted to get the U.S. involved as revenge for Suez and all these other issues of resentment. So Obama is stalling. It's thought that McChrystal has requested 40,000 more, but we don't know that. It could be 60,000 more, 80,000 more have been discussed on various television programs. We've got a calculation now that your chances, if you're a U.S. serviceman, your chances of getting killed in Afghanistan are 16 times worse than Iraq at the present time. And then we've got this dimension of imperialist meddling. How was the Vietnam War lost? Well, it was lost in advance by getting rid of Diem and his brother, right, getting them killed in a coup approved by W. Averill Harriman. Now we've got Karzai on the road to Diemization. And this is in the form of this constant carping about the so-called election. I mean, if you want to be an imperialist, be one, but they've got to do it with elections. So they say that Peter Galbraith was right. There was widespread fraud, and his boss at the UN was wrong. That guy, a Scandinavian, has got to he's had to go to Canossa and say that, yes, there was terrible fraud. So there's now going to be a second round, more instability, more chaos, and so forth. Related stories, Hillary Clinton went to Moscow trying to rope the Russians, to dupe the Russians into participating in increased sanctions, a new round of sanctions against Iran, and they have said no, not at this time, meaning no. That's from Putin and from Lavrov. Russian diplomacy. Russians are worried now. The U.S. is talking to the Ukraine about sites for ABM radar. That's dangerous. U.S. Patriot missiles. This is a sop for the Poles after Obama announced that he wouldn't be putting the ABMs into Poland. A Patriot missile battalion arrives in Poland early in 2010, early next year. Russian diplomacy, very active. Putin has received the visit of the Sultan of Brunei, who used to be a complete U.S. puppet, actually a puppet of even Oliver North back in the day. Putin has been in China, coming back with $3.5 billion in concrete economic deals and also various kinds of strategic discussions, to be sure. And we're also in the aftermath of intensive diplomacy between Russia and Venezuela. So this is all going on. Washington Post attacks Berlusconi. Oh, on October 13th, Ann Applebaum, whose usual specialty is anti-Russian editorial screeds, attacks La Dolce Berlusconi. Well, bad Italian grammar and a bad idea. This is all the idea that that Berlusconi is an unspeakable scandal. In the middle of it, though, she lets the cat out of the bag. Much like Berlusconi's friend, Vladimir Putin, Berlusconi doesn't try to exert influence over all the media, just over the media that reached the majority, in other words, television. So the issue with Berlusconi remains that he is the most engaged with Russia. He's part of the South Stream pipeline, which the U.S. and the British wish to sabotage. The Washington Post, in this case, joining in on that entire thing. Now, if you want to influence the decisions being made by Obama, and this is very secret, compared to Bush, when Bush was discussing the surge, there were various plans competing. We had Field Marshal Kagan from the American Enterprise Institute coming up with the plan. Right now, everything is based on leaks. There's no open discussion. We've had five meetings of this Afghanistan death panel, and we don't really know what went on at all. Some leaks here and there. So various groups in various parts of the U.S. have called demonstrations for October 17th. So go out and join in those demonstrations where you are. Don't let this debate take place in a vacuum. Arianna Huffington says that Biden should resign. An interesting idea, a novel idea. It used to be that if you were cabinet secretary, a minister in a government, and you recommended the policy, and the other ministers, prime minister, wouldn't go along, or the president, you would say, well, in that case, I quit. In other words, a matter of principle. Now, Biden says he's against the massive escalation of U.S. forces into Afghanistan. Great. If you believe that, Biden, you should take a stand, and then if Obama goes ahead and sends more troops, you should quit. We've got, just to remind us of the hypocrisy, Colin Powell once again in the news, and it turns out that he tells us that, of course, he was against all these terrible things all along, all the terrible things done by Bush. He didn't agree with it. He's sorry he went to the UN and lied to the world. Too bad if you died, based on the lies of Colin Powell. So, Arianna Huffington, a rich oligarch to be sure, and nefarious in many ways, but an interesting idea. It shows that the tensions between Obama and his base of dupes and lemmings and Kool-Aid drinkers, even here, the tensions are radically increasing. Finally, watch out for anarchists. Anarchists are police agents, anarchists in this case, NATO agents. The city of Poitiers in France have been visited by a roving band of anarchists who have smashed windows, destroyed businesses, smashed cars, burned cars and other things. This is another lesson to people that in the time of increasing protests, watch out for anarchist provocateurs. They are on the NATO payroll. So we will be back with you next week on World Crisis Radio.
Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm pleased to announce a completely new and exciting way to listen to your favorite GCN Live program on your telephone. Simply by calling 712-338-7200, you'll be hearing your favorite GCN Live programs in seconds. Tune into all of our channels. I have made sure that everyone who wants to hear GCN Live will have the opportunity to do so. Call to listen at 712-338-7200. That's 712-338-7200. Thanks again for listening to GCNLive.com. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.